You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to Real Life Real Crime Daily for Wednesday, January 25th. I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Overton.
And I'm Mike Agavino. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mike.
We doing okay today?
We're doing great.
Living large.
A lot of crime going on in the world.
Enough crime out there for you guys?
Always have job security on this point, right?
Yes, we will. Well, before we get into some of the incredible news stories that are out there, I want to circle back on stories we've been covering over the last few episodes. The first one I want to revisit is our six-year-old Virginia boy who shot his teacher.
Love.
You guys remember
that
story? Okay. Well, more's coming out about what was happening in the school prior to the day that he came in and shot the teacher, and pointing some fingers at administrators who may not have done everything that they should have done to protect the teacher and protect other students,
to say the least.
Yes. So. The six-year-old boy who shot his teacher had previously expressed hatred for another teacher whom he threatened. He wrote a note to that teacher. This was well before the shooting incident. And in the note, he informed that teacher that he hated her and wanted to kill her by setting her on fire.
Okay. Before you go any further, when I was in that grade, my parents actually made a paddle just for my teachers to use on me, and I deserved every lick he got.
Not surprised.
This dude needed a paddle.
Yeah, and I'll even expand on that point just to say, if you'll go back to the other episode we recorded on this, one of the major issues that I had was the fact that they supposedly searched a book bag and couldn't find a daggum gun.
I see that video.
So. You know, what this update did for me was it just kind of verified the stupidity of not only the school, but we're going to get into some things that were even more shocking that we found out with this case.
Yeah.
Yes. So that teacher that received the threat about being set on fire went to administrators at that Richneck Elementary School in Newport News, Virginia, and she was told to drop it.
Drop it.
She was told to drop it by the administrators. This is according to the Washington Post.
That is bad in so many ways.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah. So we know that sometime after this, he shot his first grade teacher, Abigail Zwerner. We've talked about Zwerner and her condition, and Zwirner repeatedly asked administrators for help with the boy, who was known to throw chairs in the classroom and other
paddle. He should have paddled his ass when he threw a chair, and he would not have got this far.
That doesn't happen anymore.
I know it doesn't. This is probably what's wrong with
him. Exactly.
Well, so it's clear that school officials dismissed two separate accounts, two separate teachers, about the disturbing behavior of this kid.
Lawsuit.
Now, and not only did they dismiss those accounts, there was even complaints. They would get on like Zoom and discuss, you know, issues, and teachers would get in these chat sessions, and this particular child, and I want to preface this with, look, he's 6 years old. His brain is far from being developed. Right. And so I don't hold him wholly even responsible for what he did at 6 years old. We've all had 6 year olds.
Somebody should have corrected that.
So, right. And, but it was common knowledge that this kid was a major behavior problem well before this incident took place. So my issue, you know, goes back to the beginning. What, when you have a child with this many complaints about being a behavioral issue, and you know, someone says he has a gun in his book sack, or we think he does, how do you miss the gun? It shocks me.
You should have double checked him after he told his other teacher he was going to set her on fire.
It shouldn't have been at school at that point.
Right.
Period.
Teachers had participated in these regular chat sessions with the superintendent and claimed in those sessions that Zwirner, the one, the teacher that was shot, repeatedly raised alarms about this kid's behavior and asked for help dealing with him through the school year. And she asked several times, other teachers chimed in, and school administrators ignored those concerns about the six-year-old's conduct, claiming the school was not equipped to provide proper care for him. At some point, somebody needed to realize that they either needed to get this kid out of the school and put him somewhere else, or put some very specific measures in place to try and control his behavior.
At least watch him.
At least
shake him down.
Minimum. And believe it or not, the mother and father, there was actually a kind of an order or a care plan where they had to attend school with the child. It just so happened that this particular day they did not. And it goes back to, you know, initially I'm like, you kind of have to blame the parents because he got his hand on a gun. But part of me was like, you know, giving them the benefit of the doubt that maybe they didn't know that he had the gun in his book sack. Here's the thing. I didn't realize the kid was, practically a little Charles Manson here and the worst kid in school. And it is so bad, in fact, that his parents were attending class with him. You should have never had a gun. Obviously, your child, and I feel bad for this child, but obviously this child had major issues.
Right.
How could you not be cognizant of that?
Right. It's
shocking to me.
Yeah, I would go on record saying that this is probably the first six-year-old anybody's ever had, you know, threatened to set their teachers on fire and throwing chairs and their parents going to school with them. And certainly, as we know, shot his teacher. I mean, just whole bunch of new policies and procedures will come out because of this boy.
Well, the family issued their own statement, the boy's family, saying that their six-year-old was, quote-unquote, under a care plan, as Jim just said, that included his mother or father attending school with him and accompanying him to class every day. But for some reason, which we don't know yet, hasn't come out in any of the news reports, stopped the week of the shooting. So I don't know whether there was some sort of declaration that this was no longer necessary, or there was some kind of conflict scheduling-wise where the parents couldn't do it that particular week. They went on to say, we will regret our absence on this day for the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
I think we all agree they probably will.
Yeah. And there's no excuse when you have a child with a behavior problem that major to even have a gun. That thing should have been locked up behind lock and key with a password protected and everything else. I can't wrap my mind around
that. I agree with you on that, and I'm not one for lawsuits, but this teacher, I hope the school has a big-ass insurance policy because she deserves every penny she's going to get.
100.
For sure. Second update, we're going to revisit our criminal mastermind, Brian Walsh, and his still-missing wife.
Yeah,
Anna. You guys will remember this this story, this incredible story of the woman who disappeared on New Year's Eve, and the elaborate tale her her husband Brian Walsh told of her disappearance. Well, last Wednesday, he appeared for his arraignment, and the charges at the arraignment were murder and illegally disinterring or moving a body. So those are the two charges. He pled not guilty to those charges. And prosecutor Lynn Beland gave quite a statement in the courtroom that all begins with, "Rather than seeking a divorce, Brian Walsh dismembered Anna Walsh and discarded her body." So on the list of options you have to separate your from your spouse, divorce or – weren't there some other choices between divorce and the
divorce and
dismemberment and discarding of the body?
I think I'm not trying to make light of it, but it really comes down to economics for him. He didn't want to pay a divorce attorney and alimony and all that, so he just killed her and cut her up. I don't know why this story doesn't have more national coverage than it does. I mean, but we've covered it, and everything from him lying about, oh, she just left at midnight or whatever, she had to go into work, and come on, man. That's a real living human being, his wife, his forever partner, and he cut her up.
And from all accounts, an amazing woman, you know, a professional, very well respected, you know, in her work. And Brian Walsh was not the slickest of criminals you would ever meet. Number one, and we've discussed this before, anytime a wife ends up missing or dead, the first person they're going to look at is the husband, whether he did it or not. It's a process of elimination, Woody, I'm sure, that's detectives.
Yep. And prisons are full of dummies.
Yeah. It's hard to catch. And they have one on the way. Yeah,
right.
This guy would be near the top of the list. So Beland presented an array of evidence along three general lines. Okay, one, discoveries of Anna Walsh's blood and personal items in local garbage. Two, the GPS phone tracking data showing Brian Walsh's movements during this period of time. And three, Google search data related to dismembering of bodies and disposing of bodies.
Clear your search history.
Well, you have to do more than that.
Destroy your computer.
Hillary Clinton could tell you how to wipe that.
Destroy your computer.
Wipe that email. Hey,
how fucking stupid do you have to be to research that shit and then do it and then leave your computer in house? Prisons are full of dummies.
Well, Walsh's defense attorney, Tracy Miner, said in a statement after the arraignment that she wasn't going to comment on the evidence directly, but suggested that the prosecution's case against her client is weak.
Miss Miner, your client's going to prison.
She said she has not seen, she has not been sent the evidence yet. And quote, "In my experience, whereas here, the prosecution leaks so-called evidence to the press before they provide it to me, their case isn't that strong."
Miss Miner, I doubling down, your client's going to prison.
I can't wait to get to the Google searches of this story.
So here, let's just review Prosper Lynn Beeland's review of the items that are part of her, quote, weak case.
Right.
Okay. So we'll just go through these pretty quickly. 10 bags of evidence were found at a garbage collection station, and Walsh had thrown away at his mother's home in Swampscott. The bags contained a hacksaw, hatchet, towels, rags, gloves, and a heavily stained rug.
And the body will be found near there.
A Tyvek suit, Anna Walsh's COVID-19 vaccination card.
Jesus.
Okay. Real Life Real Crime Daily investigators have confirmed that dismemberment is not a known side effect of the vaccines.
Yeah, so, right. Hey, the other thing is, think about this, y'all. All that shit they found, he touched it. His DNA is going to be on it. And again, I'm tripling down. Defense attorney, your client's going to prison.
There was also a nice Prada purse that she often carried and a necklace found at that garbage collection site. The state crime lab tested the bloody items in the bags and found DNA from both Anna and Brian Walsh on a pair of slippers and the Tyvek suit.
But the DNA on the bag, he can explain away his DNA, you know, his wife. Yeah. Explain your DNA on the bag. And I'm quadrupling down, your client's going to prison.
Well, if that makes you quadruple down, then I would like to ask his defense attorney if this would be something that would be bad for him, and that is the Google searches.
Yeah, they're going to say, oh, well, anybody had access to the computer, somebody else did it.
Uh-huh.
They're going to say anything but that he did it until it comes down to the nut cutting and he takes a plea bargain for life.
Well, I believe it was his son's iPad that they found the searches on.
Oh, so, yeah, it's on the son now.
That's unless the son was looking to frame the father. I think Brian's brilliant move was they'll check my stuff, but they're not going to check my son's iPad. So let me use.
He should have had his son roll around and the COVID vaccine card and all the jewelry and the person before he threw out.
Some of these searches are pretty incredible. How long before a body starts to smell? Mm. What does formaldehyde do? How long does DNA last? Can identification be made on partial remains?
Hey, this defense attorney might come up and say he can't even read.
It gets worse.
Dismemberment and the best ways to dispose of a body.
Yes.
I mean, you cannot make this stuff up. Right. This is legit searches the day of and the day after she went disappearing.
Yeah. After she was murdered by her husband.
How to clean blood from a wooden floor. What happens when you put body parts in ammonia?
I bet you they have wooden floors and not tile where you cut her up at.
Is it better to put crime scene clothes away or wash them?
I can promise you I've never made that Google search. No. I mean, these are insane.
Is it better to use Tide or is a hacksaw the best tool to dismember? Can you be charged with murder without a body?
I mean, there you go. And let me tell you, that defense attorney can't weasel her way out of this. That open and shut right there.
The defense attorney's going to do it. You know, they always do.
Well, anybody can search
their hearts go out to this lady.
Yeah.
Nobody deserves to be murdered. We're making light of this dumbass.
We're making fun of that guy.
But he's going to get what he deserves.
Well, last episode, we highlighted his Home Depot $450 shopping spree and the items he'd bought. But he also went to Home Goods and purchased 3 rugs. So I can think of no better time to do a little home decorating than when your wife is missing.
One of those rugs is on that wooden floor.
Yeah. And the other two probably have a body in them.
Yeah, you're right.
A little bit about his history that we weren't aware of last time we talked about him is that in 2014, Anna Walsh told police that someone threatened to kill her and her friend, according to an incident report CNN obtained from the Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Police. A spokesperson for the department confirmed that Brian Walsh was the person involved in the report. So now we're going back 9 years to find that this guy was making threats nearly a decade ago, right? Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, at that point in time, Anna chose not to move forward with and file charges. And so he convinced her at that point in time, I guess, that that he was going to change his behavior. And unfortunately for her, it was only a matter of time. In 2019, he was described by relatives and family friends as an angry and dishonest person who had swindled money from his father, Dr. Thomas Walsh. He'd been disinherited by Walsh. Walsh's several of his dad's friends have come out and made statements about Brian being diagnosed as a sociopath and a very angry and physically violent person. So, and then we know again from last time that he was indicted on federal charges in 2018 for selling the fake Andy Warhol artwork. And so, and that he had pled guilty to those charges, and he'd actually been on house arrest and monitored as he was awaiting his sentencing. And so this is clearly tragic, unbelievable that this guy thought he could get away with any of this, given the history.
He's a prime example why we build prisons.
Do you guys know what May 12th is? Sunday, May 12th?
Mama's Day.
That would be correct. It's Mother's Day. So let me ask you, do you basically get your mom the same gift every year for Mother's Day? Maybe some flowers, some chocolates, maybe a robe or a framed photo, boring stuff, right?
Right.
Well, let me tell you about something that's totally cool and different from Mother's Day that will never wilt, spoil, or put an extra 10 pounds around her waist. I'm talking about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty unique. Cool, right?
Right.
Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you wish to ask. Your mom can either type a response to the email, or she can record her voice if she prefers to do that, or she can do both. Cool. And MyLifeInABook.com then compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book, as well as an audiobook. And if you want, and she's up to the task technically, you know, the audiobook is a great extra thing to be able to do. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy, something you and your future generations can treasure. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is kind of your chance to give her a way to share them. Every family's a little bit different, and in my family, we love to give each other a really hard time. So I've taken the approach in doing this of asking my mom to comment on some of those family moments that might be a bit embarrassing to other family members. Last week, my question was, Mom, did you feel guilty that day you hit me over the head with your wooden clog and Dad had to take me to the hospital for 8 stitches? Mom's response, back in the day, I was the disciplinarian of the house. And when you were 8 years old, you refused to get out of Nancy's, that's my sister's, plastic kiddie pool. I told you 10 times to get out of the damn pool. You didn't listen, so I chased you around the yard. And when you slipped, I nailed you right on the head. That was the last time you got in that kiddie pool. Of course, Dad had to lie to the ER and tell him that that you fell on your head, but I nailed you good. The entire process with My Life in a Book is simple, and in the end, Mom will have a great keepsake that can remain in your family for generations.
Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code RLRC at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use code RLRC for 10% off today.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
So moving on to some news stories, this one hits very close to home. A 19-year-old LSU student named Maddie Brooks was killed last week, and we didn't know much about it at the time, and a lot more has come out.
Other than she was killed by a vehicle, right, on Burbank. And then and I'm like, you know, it's a lot of LSU partying down there. What's going to come out on this is they were drinking at Tigerland. I had the first apartment right behind the three bars there, so I could stumble home every night. She ends up on Bird Bank, gets hit, and dies from her injuries. But now, as Paul Harvey would say, we're going to tell you the rest of the story.
And I want to thank, look, as soon as this story broke yesterday, had a text come up from a listener named Lori Johnson, who said, I hope y'all are going to be covering this.
Best banker chick ever.
Yeah, best banker chick ever. So thank you, Lori. And yes, we're all over it. They have arrested 4 people after an investigation into this student's death. And so we're going to get into all that. There was multiple people arrested. Sources said a 17-year-old was booked into the East Baton Rouge Parish Juvenile Detention Center on Sunday on account of third-degree rape. He was assisted and in a car with an 18-year-old man identified as Kavion Washington, along with Kaysen Carver, who was also 18. Now, Washington faces charges of third-degree rape, and Carver was booked as a principal to third-degree rape. And a fourth suspect, 28-year-old Everett Lee, who was identified as the uncle of Washington, was also booked as a principal to third-degree rape. Now, Woody, what is a principal to third-degree rape?
To you. First of all, let's talk about third-degree rape. Okay, third-degree rape is when you rape somebody, you have sexual intercourse, penetration, no matter how slight. It could be your earlobe, your mouth, your nostril, your anus, your vagina, whatever. When the person is incapacitated due to being intoxicated by alcohol or narcotics. And principal to means you were there when it happened, you didn't do shit to stop it, and you didn't report it. That's 1427, Louisiana Vice Statute 1427 is principal to. So principal to, you're just as guilty.
Yes, and so when this case initially broke, it was this sophomore at LSU was hit by a car. It was tragic. As Woody said, it was something where you looked at it and it happened around the Tigerland area of Baton Rouge, which is made up of many bars. So the assumption was she got drunk, stumbled out in front of a car and got hit. Incidentally, the vehicle that hit her was a rideshare gentleman. And not at that time suspected to have been under any sort of influence of alcohol or narcotics or anything. It was just a situation where she stumbled in the road and got hit. This news broke, and it is disturbing to say the least when you have a rape that now has taken place, according to reports, and people have to be held obviously accountable to that. Some of the questions that came up before we even go any further into this is, how did she get in a car with 4 guys when she's out drinking at a club? Her blood alcohol level was 0.319% at the time.
And I want to talk about that. Not only is that almost 4 times the legal limit, okay? When I was in law enforcement, if you stop someone for DWI and brought them in, they blew on the machine. If they hit a 0.30, you had to immediately call an ambulance, all right? 0.319 is stupid. Now, I'll tell you another little quick story. Back in my day, when I was in uniform patrol, it was my night off, and I said, you know what? I really want to test the machine, right? I'm going to see how much I can drink and how short of a time and what I'll blow. And I was like 250, 260 at the time. I drank a case of beer in an hour and a half, shotgunning them. I mean, almost to the point I pretty much was blacked out, and I blew a 0.14. So this little bitty girl blowing a 0.319, I can guarantee that's alcohol poisoning, basically. And so that's what goes back to the third degree rape. You have to know that this young lady is passed out or they said she gave several different addresses, et cetera, like that. But that's what they're saying. But I'd be very surprised if she was even coherent when they raped her and they put her out of the car and she gets hit by Uber.
And here's my, yes, I agree. And here's one of probably the biggest problem I have with this whole thing. And that is Washington, who surrendered to the police, actually contacted the media.
Chris Nakamoto.
WBRZ's Chris Nakamoto right before he surrendered and gave him a statement. And in that statement, he said he had sex with Brooks before she died and that it was consensual. That makes me want to slap him because if you have a 0.319 alcohol percentage, there's nothing consensual there. And, Wake up.
And certainly he didn't have an intoxilizer machine to register her a 0.319. But a 0.319, remember, y'all, I was more than twice this girl's size, and mine was a 0.14 after a case of beer.
Okay? Certainly he knew she was drunk.
Absolutely.
And there, right there, you can't consent.
Well, I mean, and she was in a sorority and everything else. I'm sure I have no direct knowledge, but I'm sure when you're out at the bars, like we used to be back in the day, and I was in a frat, you're out there with your people, right? At some point, she gets separated out. Maybe they're in there and they notice this young, attractive female, and they cut her out of the herd. I don't know, but she ended up in the backseat of the car. And you can't have consensual rape when somebody's not even awake.
That's right. And Washington also
consensual sex.
And Washington also did go on to tell Nakamoto that the other suspects and Brooks left Reggie's, which is a bar at Tigerland, after a night of drinking. He said he and another teen had sex with Brooks in the back of a vehicle.
That really pisses me off because they're saying that Brooks is basically a hoe and had sex with two people consensually in the back seat of a car.
Carver and Lee, who were also in the car, they were in the front seat, and that's why they are accessories to rape. The issue also here for me is, how the heck did she, you know, I'm sure she was drunk and just kind of wandered off, ended up with these guys somehow. But a lot of the ladies listening out there right now, when you were in college and you went out and you were drinking, and us as guys, same way, you're in groups. And I would imagine, especially girls, you kind of look out for each other. And when you see one has had a little bit too much, you're going to keep your eye on her. You're going to watch her. Where are you going? Why are you talking to those guys? Come back over here. I'm not saying that didn't happen. And I'm not saying that this girl didn't just wander off on her own away from her friends and they just lost track of her. The ladies that I have talked to about this incident already, that was their first question was, right, where were her friends?
And I have 24 and a 23-year-old, I have 24 and 23-year-old daughters. Both of them are absolutely beautiful. I know they go out and they party, but I tell them all the time, watch out for each other, right?
Absolutely.
And we're not throwing shade on this victim, y'all, because she is absolutely a victim. But I'm throwing this as a daddy to you. Tell your kids, you know,
stay
when they're at that age, you think nothing can happen to you. This is proof, and Miss Brooke being raped and then murdered is definitely proof.
Well, and
it's going to go back to the you watch what's going to come out on this. The bars are going to get in trouble. They're going to go back and pull video footage. Somebody overserved this young lady.
Sure.
It's a great point.
When you go out in a group and for different reasons, we used to do this as guys, but if it's a group of 10, 12, 15, however many people, pick a wing person, a wing man, a wing woman. And, you know, you're bonding with each other, that you're leaving the place you went to together, regardless of who gets into what flirty behavior with whom. You're locked and loaded together, and you're not going to separate until you return home.
Yeah, we had rally points. Like Tigerland, there's three boards. Back then it was Fred, Sports, and the Tiger.
Yep.
And we had a rally point at the end of the night. Everybody meets here. If you hook up, then you know, let us know you hooked up and you're good to go. A lot of times it's because we ended up in fist fights. But take care of each other, people. And my heart goes out to this young lady's family and all her friends and everybody, her sorority sisters. And it's just absolutely tragic. And them raping her. Basically, y'all, the street term for that is dead horsing. When someone's so incapacitated that you have sex with them and they can't even refuse it. And the two assholes in the front that watched it, I would be very surprised with the phones nowadays if somebody didn't film it.
Well, the NAACP is working with a prominent Baton Rouge attorney representing two of the suspects, saying there is a video
that
supposedly refutes the allegations that Brooks was raped.
I promise y'all, I had not read that far.
I think that they're saying there's a video. So obviously a guy took his cell phone and makes it even sicker.
One of the guys in the front seat.
Let me record this.
Young lady could be in rape.
But you know what? What sticks in my mind is it's third degree rape no matter what, because she had a 0.319 alcohol level. This girl is not making decisions she would make sober. Did they rape her as if you walked in a window and just screwed somebody? No.
They can't say, blood alcohol can go up even though you quit drinking, it'll still rise for a while. But that's her being that hammered is – and I think the video is going to show that they were doing it. Maybe she was saying no or mumbling or what, or straight passed out. And they're like, ha-ha, get a video of it, of your ass going to prison.
And then on top of all this, one thing that we do need to mention is that after these rapes took place, Washington also went on to say that Brooks gave him multiple addresses that were different. So they're at this point being the nice guys, they're going to bring her home after they third degree raped her. So she gave them multiple addresses. They were like, you don't live here. You don't live there. What's going on? So they just basically put her out of the car on Burbank, which is a major intersection in Baton Rouge.
Right.
And she gets hit by a driver. Of a rideshare driver.
Look, I'm just looking at this again. 19-year-old. Mm-hmm. Now, when I was 18, you could drink. 19-year-old now in the bars, 0.3 whatever. It's tragedy all the way around.
Yeah, and one was 17, and two of them were 18. Yeah,
and the other side. So the 17-year-old.
Four people in a bar drinking that are underage.
I bet you money, especially 17-year-old was the one who partook in the rape. He's going to get charged as an adult. Hiller Moore is going to hammer his ass. Or DA, who's a good guy.
Woody, question on the statute that applies here. Mm-hmm. Is it the third-degree rape comes in – at any point, the person is above the legal.
It doesn't have to be legal drinking amount or whatever. If you're incapacitated, like somebody gave you a roofie, or you're too drunk, it comes into play when you can't defend yourself, basically. And even if you're saying no, but you can't move your arms, or if you pass out, dead horse. Anytime those parameters are in place, third degree rape.
So it's subjective.
Yeah. But guess what? They got a video.
And 0.319, even if she looks like she was functioning properly, the law states in Louisiana that it is a point, what is it, 0.10?
0.08 now.
0.08 is considered legally drunk. So the law states that if you're 0.08, you're not able to make correct decisions. Your motor skills are slowed, all of those sorts of things. 0.319 is clearly drunk. Your decision making is altered.
Louisiana was the last state in the union to change from 0.10 to 0.08. And because they were making, at my time, Louisiana was making more money off of alcohol sales taxes to people between the ages of 18 and 21 than they were losing from the federal government cutting their highway funds and stuff because they didn't do it. But ultimately, they gave in and did it, but it doesn't matter. Even though they can get into bar rooms now, they're supposed to have the stamps or whatever where they can't drink. Well, we know everybody can get around that, but how do you get around it that much?
Well, but you can
remember I drank a case of beer 0.14 and I was more than twice our size.
You can kind of see what's coming here though. If I mean this is subjective and you have attorneys working with the accused that say there is a video that refutes the allegations that she was raped. So that's what we're looking at here as we go forward is the presentation of video evidence that will supposedly support the position that that she was aware of what was going on and otherwise that video wouldn't exist, right? If, I mean, they were taking video and the video clearly showed that she was incapacitated and everything else, then that video gets deleted and destroyed and everything else. So I think we're going to see at least an attempt to present that that she was aware of what was going on.
What that video is going to show is that she was not fighting them, and maybe look, maybe she wanted the sex. The thing that everybody's missing is you can't consent to the sex if you're drunk and it not be considered rape. Right. To that capacity. Yeah. It's one thing if you have a margarita and your blood alcohol level is 0.08 and it's right at the drunk limit and you have sex with someone and then you decide that was a bad idea and you would have a legitimate argument there. 0.319, there is no one walking God's green earth that can drink and have a blood alcohol level of 0.319 and not look and act like they are totally shit-faced.
Yep. And even if the video, and I'm just speculating, y'all, if the video, you know, in whatever way shows there was some enjoyment there or whatever, it doesn't mean you're not so fucked up that you can't give consent. That's why they had a law. That's right. Why a third-degree rape is.
So right.
These attorneys coming in and whatever, we'll see. I can promise you we'll have more updates on this story.
For sure. Moving on, in a weekend that brought us all kinds of crazy stories and murders, we have coming out of East Los Angeles, the mass murder of now 11 people in Monterey Park, California. And you know, authorities are still trying to determine for sure the motive of a gunman who killed, like I said, now 11 and injured 9 others at a dance studio in Monterey Park. The suspect, who's a 72-year-old man named Hu Can Tran, was found dead of a self-inflicted gunshot wound in a van in Torrance, California, on Sunday.
Hell or jail, he's going where he belongs.
Which was the end of a manhunt that started in Monterey Park and took them to Alhambra, which is about 17 minutes away. And apparently this guy was looking to light up another dance studio, this one in Alhambra, and was stopped by some people who spotted him with the weapon and were able to wrestle it out of his hand and get him out of that that dance studio, or we'd be collecting more bodies in this case.
It's just crazy, absolutely crazy. Who knows what's in someone's mind? At least this guy took his own life. Hell or jail. Hearts go out to the families. I mean, shit is just everywhere, and it's nonstop. In Baton Rouge this weekend, one nightclub, 12 people got shot. You know, they could just as be 12 dead as it was 11 dead there. I don't even know what to say about it anymore.
Hopefully in the days to come, we'll find out more about the motives of Hu Can Tran and exactly what went on here.
You know, I did find interesting with this situation in that the state that this came out of was California, which has one of the toughest gun laws, if not the toughest gun laws in the country. And so, I mean, to me, it's just proof that the responsibility lies in the people.
China has some of the toughest gun laws in the world.
Great Britain, same way.
Mass stabbings. I mean, if someone wants to kill, they want to kill. They're going to do it, period.
Well, the thing that really kind of drove me crazy as I was watching the early reports on this story. Before they knew who the gunman was, you just got a feeling like the media was prepping and stoking for this to be a race-related incident, almost cheering for it to be a racially motivated, you know, quote-unquote, hate crime. And I couldn't help but notice that the Babylon Bee, the satire site that that pokes a lot of fun at both sides of the aisle, but predominantly at liberals, put a fake story out that really got to the core of what I just said, which is the Babylon Bee immediately after the news of the horrible attack broke said, as of now, it's unclear how bad the attack is or whether anyone should care about it, since authorities have not yet released the skin colors of the perpetrator and the victims.
That's such bullshit. It's crazy. Crazy that 11 people were murdered in besides the fake news story, 11 people were murdered, and this shit doesn't get more national attention than Real Life Real Crime Daily, basically, after it happened.
That's because we cover it all around here.
That's right. Hearts go out to the victims. Fuck the bad guy.
Yes.
Pretty heavy so far, guys. So I think we should lighten it up a little bit.
Love it.
Yeah.
Agree.
Light it up.
And this story definitely does.
Tell them about Killed Him Good or something.
Lighten it up with some espionage news.
Uh-oh.
This story I just could not believe. So Real Life Real Crime Daily investigators have learned that late in the 1990s, a sting operation led to the mysterious NSA ban of Furbies. You guys remember Furbies?
Yes, I do. I bet you
robotic pets.
Half our listeners don't, but yeah.
I hated these things.
I can safely say I never owned one.
I didn't even know they were spies at the time, and I despised them. But I did not know that the NSA had once banned them. You heard that correctly.
That's the National Security Agency, y'all. It's not NASA.
In 1998... Furbies hit the store shelves just in time for the holiday shopping season and created a frenzy. And
I remember that.
I mean, a frenzy. It was it was like the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie Jingle All the Way, where he's
fighting for the kid, he's fighting one doll, yeah.
Whatever that guy's name was. What was the superhero's name?
I can't remember. But
that was a great movie.
Turbo Man. Turbo
Man. It should happen all the time. Whether it was Cabbage Patch Kids or whatever the hot toy was for Christmas, fur babies were it. I thought they were stupid then. I think they're stupid now. But this story is even stupider.
I think Furby was the inspiration for Turbo Man and that movie. But Furby was a first of its kind robotic pet, rumored to be part hamster and part owl. Furby greeted children and sang to them in Furbish,
hamster and owl,
an entirely made up language, or so we were led to believe. Furby could be started by loud noises. He responded to petting. He danced when he or she was supposedly happy, just like a real animal might.
Sounds like my wife.
But the most innovative and suspicious feature was that Furby could supposedly learn English. So these things supposedly learned how to speak. They learned a language. The more you interacted with them.
Did they know how to say Takira?
We'll get to that one too. So this learning ability of the Furby is what created this whirlwind of conspiracies that included the idea that Furby was actually an international spy.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
And this is 1998, y'all, all this stuff was – technology moved leaps and bounds between about 1992 and 2005.
This was before Alexa was listening to
We took 30 years steps in technology in like 4 years. We went from floppy disks to complete internet in like 3 years.
It's a little known fact that the technology for Furby actually came off the spaceship that crashed in Area 51. And I'm sorry, Roswell, Mexico.
Jesus. You're right. This yeah. turned out not to be an early version of AI. What turned out was, you know, Furby contained a technology unknown before its launch. And that's what concerned the NSA and why they stepped in and banned the toys from NSA premises, from the Pentagon, and from other government installations.
Because some spy stole it from Area 51.
They believed the robots had integrated listening capabilities that would allow them to listen in on sensitive topics and later replay classified conversations.
Because a lot of people in the Pentagon had their Furbies in their office, right? Or NSA, no, security agency. I got a Furby.
So the manufacturers of Furby, which is a company, I don't know if they're still around, called Tiger Electronics, refuted the ban, claiming that, quote, Furby was not a spy. Eventually, they revealed that the toys were pre-programmed with about 200 words.
I got a Furby.
So pre-programmed with 200 words, meaning they didn't actually learn anything, that they would slowly unveil this vocabulary of 200 words the longer a child interacted with it. So meanwhile, the outlandish Furby fears, including the belief that it could launch a space shuttle, didn't slow its popularity. There were more than 40 million Furbies sold in the first 3 years.
Right. In 1978, I had a Millennium Falcon.
I did too.
Did
I
had you?
With the trap floor. Me I did too. The big
yeah,
one.
Yeah, that was freaking the shit. Awesome.
I didn't even have the men that went in it, but I had it.
But back then, it wasn't no spy stuff going on.
Furby.
I think that's just a victim of
I'm going home.
Massive step in technology, and people just were freaked
out. When I leave the studio today, I'm going home and tell my wife I got a Furby.
That's right. So not only do you learn about crime on this show, you learn about how Furbies can
Can we get a Furby and get it to say Takira?
Well, what? I don't know if that's one of the 200 words.
Hey, but I mean, it should have been.
It should have been, but I think I'm gonna check later today to see if there are any available on eBay.
I was about to say I'm about to buy me one.
Yeah,
of these
I think there got to be some out there still. So let's check on eBay later.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, next subject.
Got a Furby.
Everybody's like, WTF on the Furby.
Yeah.
So next subject is a revisit of a story that broke in 2021 and was one of the bigger stories of the year of 2021, and that was the accidental shooting on set of cinematographer Helena Hutchins.
I got to interrupt. This is it's horrible this person died. But the fact that this is one of the biggest stories of the year disturbs me. But go ahead. That's my personal opinion. I know I fucked you
it's
up.
Pretty major.
Yeah, I know, right? But that's still my opinion. Because they played it over and over and over again. But I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Any story that involves a Hollywood personality is going to blow up to 20 times the exposure it should get. But for those of you who don't remember the case, this is on the set of the film Rust, which is a Western. The set was in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and the scene that was being filmed was one that required a gun to be in Alec Baldwin's hand. Alec Baldwin was supposedly told, and actually I don't think this is supposedly, I think this has been verified in a number of different ways, that the gun was a quote-unquote cold gun. What do you
It means it can have blanks in it, but it won't shoot out a projectile, which can kill someone.
Baldwin would later deny that he pulled the trigger on the cold gun while pointing it in the direction of Hutchins, something that everyone that has looked at the case, including the FBI, has said is impossible, that he absolutely absolutely pulled the trigger, even though he denied ever pulling the trigger. But
I just want to interrupt right there real quick because I want to explain that. That's important. He can totally believe that he didn't pull that trigger, because when you shoot someone and you kill them and you're in that much shock, believe me, you shut down. And so, I'm not defending Alec Baldwin here in this situation, but I can tell you from studying the effects on the body after you go into a major shock, in his mind, he may actually never remember pulling that trigger. He may think, holy shit, the gun just went off. Your mind goes through a lot of things when you go into shock. And I guarantee you, I think it's ridiculous for anybody to think Alec Baldwin shot and killed this lady intentionally.
No, I don't think he did.
So if he pulled the trigger, my thing is, he may not even remember doing it. Yeah. He may have mentally blocked that.
I would want to know how many movies Alec Baldwin's been on before where someone hands him cold gun, which means you're safe to do whatever you want to. So, I mean, obviously the scene, if it had supposed blanks in or whatever, the scene was going to be a shooting scene. So him saying he didn't pull it, whatever. I mean, the cold gun, if you're in the military, like if you're handing something off, you're in line, you're in a search, whatever, you're handing something dangerous back, when the person you're handing it to, they say, mine. Right? That's code word. Mine means I've got control of this, whatever it is. Them handing it, saying cold gun, that means you're safe.
And an armorer who is hired by all films to kind of control all those things, in this case it was Gutierrez Reed, was the person responsible for checking all of that ahead of time. So I'm with you, Woody. If I'm an actor and you hand me a gun and you say cold gun, my thought process is you've done everything to investigate and make sure this is safe.
And you're the expert.
And I've been handed a gun and told cold gun, in his case, countless amount of times in my career. Never have I shot anyone. Right.
Here's the problem with that, though. He's an actor.
Uh-huh.
But he's also the producer of the film. So he has a different responsibility than he would have if he was just acting.
I don't see that as a problem, because you hired the expert. The expert has a job to do.
Had a fake resume and you didn't do due diligence on searching them or something. As a producer, you could be, have more responsibility, but it wouldn't matter.
This was a well-known company.
If this person handed it to another producer and it wasn't even on the set and they pulled the trigger and they said cold gun. I mean, that's their term, meaning weapon is safe to do whatever you want to do with it.
This was a really inexperienced armorer. This was only the second film she had played, had that responsibility for. And the film was under a lot of pressure economically to get made efficiently. Well, that's the point. Right. And so if you are the producer of the film, you have a certain responsibility. If you've hired somebody who is incompetent in the role.
I can assure you the producer of the film is not vetting their armor.
Well, here's the thing. The company that she worked for was a reputable company that had experience in many, many films over the years. That's her company's responsibility to make sure she's trained, to make sure she's repaired. It's not the producer of the film. They're hiring. Right. They're hiring the experts there. This company that she worked for didn't just start up yesterday. They had done many films involving guns. As a matter of fact, they specialized in only guns and armors and those sorts of people. So they send her out there after only two prior experiences, maybe without someone shadowing her or whatever the case may be. I still go back to you certainly cannot blame the actor or the producer. In this case, he was both. When they took all the steps they needed to take, they hired a reputable company. The reputable company put someone on the scene that was not capable of doing her job.
If you took this out of the criminal realm and just stuck it in the civil realm, when the civil realm is much lighter in finding someone at fault, they're not finding Alec Baldwin at fault.
No.
I think
world did he shoot this girl with any intention.
Well, I don't think that's under dispute. I don't think intent is part of what is going on here. So the reason we're talking about this story from 2021 is that it is back in the news because on Thursday, New Mexico First Judicial District Attorney Mary Carmack Altweez released a press statement saying that her office plans to charge both Baldwin and set armorer Hannah Gutierrez Reed with two counts of involuntary manslaughter in the commission of a lawful act. That charge includes a firearm enhancement, which makes the crime punishable by a mandatory 5 years in jail.
Let me say something on that before we go any further. So you're charging Hannah Gutierrez Reed with the same crime as Alec Baldwin in this case, and she was the one responsible for making sure that gun was cold. She was the one who handed it to Alec Baldwin and told him it was cold, but yet his responsibility matches hers.
That's not correct. She is not the one who handed it to him and told him it was cold. So let me give you a little bit more information. Altweez made the announcement before formally charging the pair, saying the charges would come before the end of the month. Delaying the charges could be a legal strategy, experts say, in an attempt to force a plea deal. Right. But prosecutors have already made one such deal with Assistant Director David Halls. Halls agreed to the plea deal to one charge of negligent use of a deadly weapon and will receive just 6 months probation. Hmm. He is the one who handed the gun to Baldwin and told him that it was a cold gun. So the person who handed the gun to Baldwin, telling him it was a cold gun, has already pled guilty and will receive 6 months probation.
So if I'm hearing this correctly, Gutierrez must have gave it to the assistant director and said, here, it's a cold gun. Then he takes it and he gives it to Alec Baldwin. He said, here, it's a cold gun. So I can see that. I can see, and I agree that he definitely played a huge role in that as far as negligence is concerned. Although there's an argument there to say that he was told it was a cold gun from Gutierrez Reed. And so to me, it seems like almost we've got to hold some people accountable, and Alec Baldwin is at the end of that chain, and at the end of the day, they're wanting to hold him as accountable to the person whose job it was to make that. It's ridiculous to me. Yeah. It's not his job. It was not his job. And I'm no huge fan of him politically, but this could have happened to anybody. You could have handed this to Ronald Reagan and he'd have shot and killed someone.
Had it been on something.
Nobody would have checked that. Before this, what actor is going to say, let me make sure, let me dry fire it somewhere first? They don't do that. That's not how it works in film. They assume that these people are correct. So that's why I'm so passionate about it. It's also going to change from here until the end of time, the way films are made.
Yep. new policy and procedures.
Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of productions have been made with guns without anything like this happening.
Except for Bruce Lee.
Well, that was a blank, though.
That was a wad that came out of the plane.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
He's the producer. He's in charge of the entire production. He's responsible for all the people on the set.
A general in the army is responsible for all the troops. It doesn't mean they're always going to make the right decisions, right?
But if he can prove that all his due diligence was done, he hired a reputable company. He didn't hire a flight. He spent the money, right? If it can be proved that he did everything possible to ensure an incident like that didn't happen and it happened anyway, how can you hold him responsible?
You
got
to be able to delegate. You're hiring what you think are the right people. He can't micromanage every fucking bullet that goes into or alleged fake bullet that goes into a gun.
Well, at the end of the day, it's how did a live round get on that set anyway?
Okay, well, interestingly, Gutierrez Reed filed a lawsuit against prop supplier PDQ Arm and Prop in January, saying the company caused Hutchins' death by providing a box to the set that contained live ammo mixed with dummy rounds.
Bingo.
There's
Seth Kenny, trouble. The owner of PDQ, denied that the live rounds came from his company in an interview he did with Good Morning America in December of 21. So we have the buck being passed through from Baldwin through the armorer to the arm and prop company. And so everybody is trying to pass responsibility down the line. I think what this what this looks like is, an attempt to get Baldwin to accept some responsibility, plead guilty to some kind of lesser charge.
It's all coming down to a lawsuit,
and we're likely to see that.
And hearts go out to the victim because it's a senseless tragedy. Period.
Yeah, I think that the prosecution here is trying to play a card. They may charge him anyway if he doesn't plea, but
they're not gonna charge him.
I don't think they have a case they're going to win. This is my personal opinion.
Prosecutors love to say they have 98.5% conviction.
I wouldn't plead to that
because of the plea bargains. Mm-mm. You got to get 12 people, but us three at this table can't agree on it.
That's actually a good point.
12 out of 12, it's not going to happen.
Well, and I think we all agree that the responsibility is
at least starts with
is in some people's hands. This could have happened to any actor on any given day, and
it could have happened.
There's too many other hands that should have caught that.
Could have happened to any actor, but again, when you're the producer, you have some responsibility here, and I think that's where this is. This is
but what precedent is that setting?
Hey, you know what, gentlemen? Let's stay tuned and see how it plays out.
Yeah. And what precedent is that setting for producers going forward? Now they're all going to be responsible if something happens on a set.
I guarantee you, producer might now.
They are. And they have
now,
insurance for just those reasons. I forget.
Criminally, I mean.
You know what we should look at? We should look at the Twilight Zone movie case where William Holden lost his life in the helicopter accident, and follow the money trail in that movie where I don't know, but I'm guessing the producers of that film paid a pretty heavy price, or their insurance company paid a pretty heavy price for what happened on the set.
I'm officially out of this discussion.
criminally was what I was questioning. The other aspects of that I get. But criminally, I don't know, man.
Look, if he'd have stuck at the Hunt for Red October and never made Working Girl or other films, I vote against. I might support him a little bit more. And
Hunt for Red October is great.
Would stop Tom speaking Clanks with that fake accent. That would help as well.
Y'all, so One thing we're going to be doing every now and again when you listen to these Real Life Real Crime Daily shows is we're going to tell you on this day. And you may be surprised to know that on this day, January 25th of 1934, John Dillinger was captured after escaping using a potato gun. Now, the bank robber John Dillinger, along with Pierpont, Mackley, and Clark, which were some accomplices of his, were captured in Tucson, Arizona. A few weeks later, he'd escaped from the escape-proof Indiana Crown Point Max Security Prison, and according to FBI files, he used a fake gun carved from a potato. That's real, y'all. He claimed it was carved out of wood, and then even more people said, oh, no, he had a real gun.
That was probably the crux of all. He bluffed the shit out of
it. Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. So when you think of January 25th, I want you to think of John Dillinger escaping using a actual gun carved out of a potato.
Yeah, for the record, he'd escaped a shit ton of times. Evidently, this is the only one that he used a Spud gun.
Very famous gangster.
They called that corrections officer Spud for the rest of his career.
Yeah, definitely. John Dillinger. How about different it was back then? Because these guys were famous because there was no other news. You didn't have a six-year-old shooting somebody. You didn't have husbands cutting their wives up and everything else.
Well, here's a sad story out of the Daytona Beach, Florida, New Smyrna Beach, Florida area. A woman could face first-degree murder charges for fatally shooting her terminally ill husband. This happened at a hospital in Daytona Beach on Saturday morning. The incident, authorities believe, was planned together by the couple. Charges are pending against Ellen Galan, 76, who is in custody following a standoff with police in her husband's hospital room. Police responded to the shooting around 11:35 a.m. Galan refused to leave the room at the hospital. Police said she planned to turn the gun on herself but decided she couldn't go through with it. Apparently, because her husband was terminally ill, they had a conversation about it, and they actually planned this approximately 3 weeks ago, that if he continued to take a turn for the worst, that he wanted her to end this. Apparently, the goal was for him to do it, but by the time 3 weeks passed, he didn't have the strength to lift the gun, so she had to carry it out for him. So the authorities negotiated with Galan. Other patients and staff were evacuated. It was somewhat of a logistical nightmare because the shooting happened on a floor that had terminally ill patients, people on ventilators, et cetera. And so they couldn't evacuate the entire floor. They focused on the important rooms. The standoff was isolated to her room, and it's not clear at this point how the wife got the gun into the hospital in the first place. But this is a sad story. A terminally ill patient, obviously a couple that was deeply in love, had a very long relationship, and a spouse that was in a lot of pain, and a couple that made a decision together to end his life if things did not improve. And so, you know, what do we think of Granny here?
That's and this is actually a really good hard question to answer. And I've seen people with Alzheimer's and that's touched my family personally in a very, very, close way. And when you see those things, you think, and in a discussion with your spouse, you might say, look, if I ever get that way, I don't want to get that way. And I'm just going to drive off a cliff or something like that. You have those conversations. I don't want to be. Look, as you age, your biggest fear becomes becoming a burden to your children or to your loved ones, and whether your children or friends or whatever. So tough.
Yeah. I don't know what to say about it other than if you ever find Woody Overton like that, you better call a homicide detective because – I'm not partaking in my own suicide by my wife or anybody else.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe she could have smothered him or gave him some dope or something. I don't know. The gunshot just seems kind of harsh. I hate it. It's sad. I hate that they're in that situation, and I'm sure she probably won't live.
Well, here's the thing. A lot of people don't realize. So you can put a DNR, a do not resuscitate order in a will, and that will instruct doctors not to put you on a ventilator or some other allow you to be in a coma for an extended period of time, and that will address a certain kind of situation. A lot of countries around the earth, Canada to our north specifically, euthanasia is legal, and it is a very significant percentage of the deaths in Canada for people over the age of 65 is euthanasia. And so it
– Dr. Kevorkian.
Yeah, that's a good example.
At this point in time, when you think a lot about a lot of the laws that have changed in this country over time, when you think about the burdens of continuing health care costs in families in situations like this that certainly know that the person that is in the coma or in a vegetated state is what their wishes would be, I think it's something we're going to see change over time.
Yeah, it's just really tough, and I don't know. You know, this is a subject a lot of times where I'll just comment, and I don't know what I would do. I don't know. That's a decision that those people made, and it's just a sad story, and I'm very sad.
Yeah, it's tough.
Way to end it on a. We got a little bit more because I was like, Mike, you just suppressed everybody in
prayers
the freaking world. Everybody's crying now.
But it's okay, y'all, because now.
Well, I don't want everybody to be depressed because I think there's a love story in there.
There is.
If you'll find the love story.
There is. And that's, they went out together. Strangely enough, I had someone on my street that I live on, the husband and wife were in the 70s. The husband found out he had Alzheimer's. And when he got to the point, he started to lose his mind. He went in a camper and he shot himself, killed himself. The wife was actually the one that found him. And, but his thing was he did not want to be a burden. And he knew he had become one. They didn't have kids. So the burden falls all on his wife, who was his age, and he didn't think she could handle it. And
flip side of the coin, a judge, I won't say a name, been married over 50-something years, had the dementia and Alzheimer, and part of that is paranoia, and his wife came home from Walmart one day, and he shot and killed her as an intruder because he didn't recognize her.
Awful.
Yeah. Awful. Now I'm really fucking depressed.
To wrap things up on this episode, we're going to issue our first set of corrections and retractions, which is a short set of corrections and retractions.
We're going to do this from time to time because I always butcher shit.
So. Well, in this particular case, I have been charged as the butcher. And
they charged Jim a little bit too, but...
We're happy to receive your cards and letters.
I was going off Mike's pronunciation.
Please keep those cards and letters coming.
Yeah, we don't mind.
But this week, I would like to apologize and address my pronunciation, my incorrect pronunciation of the word that describes restaurants that specialize in tacos and other Mexican favorites that I have been referring to as taquerias. When in fact, they are taquerias. It's so hard on this. Taquerias. Taqueria. That's it, right? Taqueria?
Yeah.
No, I believe it was Taco Vigilante who sent in that comment.
You're probably right. So. You're probably right.
Not happy about
send us a message. That's Taco Vigilante.
Some complaints about Woody's description of his truck
right,
as well.
Right, right. So. Hey, I'm going to Bear Jackson and get that mom part.
Mutt's cuts.
Yeah, mutt cuts. I got worms.
I think it's about time we wrap it up, fellas.
Yeah, we got to wrap it up. But, hey, we love and appreciate each and every one of y'all. thank you for listening and liking and sharing. We're sorry we missed Monday's episode. Shit happened. But evidently it's y'all love this because everybody blew us up about the one episode we missed, but we will come at you for sure on next Monday as well as this Friday.
Until next time, thank you for listening to Real Life Real Crime Daily. I'm Jim Chapman.
I'm Woody Overton.
And I'm Mike Agavino.
And we'll see you on Friday. Peace.
Shabusiness.
Shabusiness.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.